91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs. This is Air Check, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Jeff Beery.
I'm Jake Brownell.
And I'm Vicki Gregor.
On this episode of Air Check, Jake will be talking with local photographer Larry Hulst about the decades of photographs he's taken of rock and roll icons. The LA group The Wild Reeds stop by the 91.5 KRCC studios to play a couple of songs and chat with Vicki. We look into the Cloud Factory and Flux Capacitor and the DIY art scene here in Colorado Springs. And Hannah Fleming speaks with Finnish musician Lau Nau about the art of improvisation and scoring films. All that today on Air Check.
So, as usual, we begin the show with our musical roundtable, where we go around the table and each of us picks a song that we have not been able to get out of our heads over the last month. And Vicki, why don't we start things off with your pick?
Well, this was an easy one for me, you guys, because this is a band that I enjoy every time they make a record, because they take country music and psych music and put it together. That's very reminiscent of the Byrds and kind of days of yore. The name of the band is The Sadies, and they're featuring Kurt Vile on this song. So no way could I resist. It's called It's Easy Like Walking.
Tick, but don't confuse it with a crutch, cause I like it a lot. Hey, little one up there just playing possum, wake up to smoke 'em once you got 'em. You can say my hands got fancy footwork, dancing up and down my fret neck, like playing guitar with your brother, like planting one foot in front of the other. It's easy like walking, it's easy like walking, easy like walking, easy like walking, it's easy like walking.
So the Sadies are two brothers and their band, Dallas and Travis Good. They have been the backup band for Nico Case for many years. They work with John Spencer as Heavy Trash.
Oh, nice.
They've worked with John Doe, and they like to collaborate. They do that a lot with the Blue Rodeo. And you bring Kurt Vile into it, who was the former lead guitar player for the War on Drugs, multi-instrumentalist. And he brings that kind of Pavement, Tom Petty sort of vibe to it. And then I even hear 80s touches, you know, things that remind me of The Cure or remind me of just those little ding things that they used to put in songs. Mix it all up, and this song is like an earworm. Extreme.
This is the second time you've picked a Kurt Vile release for your favorite on Air Check.
Well, I picked Kurt Vile in and of himself,
right.
But this is just him on vocals.
Right,
this
but it's a repeat performance for you.
Because
there's
something Kurt
about Kurt that you like. And
I love him.
And you go back to.
Yeah, I really don't blame you, Vicki. The thing that's amazing to me about Kurt Vile is that he's managed to sort of revive a deeply unhip sound. You know, like taking this kind of soft rock 70s, like, you know, sometimes Tom Petty's a good one. Not that these guys aren't hip, but it's sort of a...
They hit a comfort zone sometimes that can be unmined for anything else.
Right, exactly. And he just has such an ear for great melodies and can write a pop tune that just sticks with you like nothing else.
Yeah, it takes all those 90s guys like... maybe Dinosaur Jr. and Pavement, I think of a lot. And it's like if they had a baby with Tom Petty, you would have this. You'd have this. And the Sadies just rocking away like the working band that they are.
Jeff, I think you're up next.
I have chosen an artist who's... This guy is really prolific. He's put out 16 studio albums. And before his solo career, he put out 3 studio albums with a band called Whiskey Town. He just put out his second album within 6-9 months. It's called Prisoner, and it's Ryan Adams.
Midnight coming, I can feel it in the air. Hear your own voice when your fingers through my hair. I reach out for your hand, but I know it isn't there. Pick up my phone and shiver and stare. Morning coming early, every day. I can barely sleep, I've been lying here awake. Close my eyes, I see you with some guy. Laughing like you never even knew I was alive.
Ryan Adams just really speaks to me. If you've ever been on the losing side of love and pined for someone that's moved away from you, not by your choice, this guy's music just really strikes a chord. And I think he's such a wonderfully melancholy musician. I just identify with the guy incredibly.
You know, I'm a big Ryan Adams fan myself, and he does his own production now, and I really love the way he builds this particular song. And it also put me in mind of some of the lonely Bruce Springsteen, I'm on fire kind of vibe. Same thing, you know, it's just full of longing and sadness and a very, very... very spare kind of production that just lets you fill in your own spaces.
There's only one song that I could do without on this, and it's called a Breakdown. And it's just a little too obvious, you know. But everything else has this wonderful these wonderful landscapes of melancholy and mourning, you know. Love it. I think it's just brilliant. I'm a little worried about him.
He'll get over it.
Sad.
Well, you know, this is a big breakup. Yeah. He'll get past it.
Yeah. He's making the sadness work for him.
Cashing the checks.
That's right.
That helps.
Good pick, Jeff. Good pick.
All right, Jake, you're up next.
This is a new release. It just came out today. It's Friday the 24th as we're sitting here in the studio, and this just dropped. But it's been an album that's kind of been anticipated for a while. The album is called Infinite Worlds, and it's an artist called Vagabond out of Brooklyn, New York. This song is the first track on that album. It's called The Embers.
I feel so small. My feet can barely touch the floor. On the bus where everybody is tall.
Vagabond, it's the stage name of Leticia Tamko. She's was born and raised in Cameroon and moved to New York City in high school, I think, and has made her way in the DIY scene there. And I just love the sound of this. It's really got a lot of different ingredients to it. This raw vocal quality, the kind of energy of that sort of building guitar sound. She's kind of been associated with like the kind of freak folk scene, but also this sort of punk sound. And I think it's just really satisfying to me. I love this song.
The two things I noticed right off the top of the bat is, you know, that whole kind of loud, soft dynamic, which I always love. And there's a property to her voice that definitely makes me think of early Bjork, which I you know, caught my ear then. It catches my ear now.
There's a little trickery, you know. You get this really sort of sweet sort of voice to start with, and then it gets kind of demonic or something, and the instrumentation behind it gets crunchy, and I like it. Yeah.
Me too.
I gotta ask, Jake, how did you find out about Vagabond day of dropping the CD?
You know what? I actually found out about it via our friends at NPR Music, and it's always fun to kind of catch an artist right as they're
breaking.
Right as they're breaking.
That concludes this edition of the Musical Roundtable. You're listening to Aircheck on 91.5 KRCC.
Photographer Larry Hulst never imagined that his pictures would one day be hanging in an art museum.
It's been a mind blower, overwhelming to me.
Hulst began his photography career taking pictures of his favorite musicians at concerts in the 60s. Over the last 50 years, he's toted his camera to thousands of shows across the country and snapped photos of everyone from Jimi Hendrix to Stevie Nicks to David Bowie. Now a collection of those photos are on display at the Colorado Springs Fine Arts Center in an exhibit called Front Row Center. Hulst recently joined me in the studio to talk about his love of music and to tell the stories behind some of the photos in the show. You got your start in photography on the West Coast, right? In the Bay Area?
I was. I lived in Sacramento, and I came back from Vietnam in 69 and started going down to the Fillmore West.
And that's kind of a mythical time and place, in a way. The San Francisco in the 60s.
Yeah. And it was just as dirty as all the rest of them, but it also had that mythology, and it's kind of bled over, and I was very lucky to have gone there. You either had a choice during those weekends when you would go to San Francisco, either going sometimes on a Thursday and a Sunday night to Fillmore, which was about a 1,000-seater, and then they'd move those same shows to Winterland Friday and Saturday, and those would be around 4,000-seaters. So it was special when you'd see the shows at the Fillmore, and they'd put in just as much. They'd be around $2. And each band would play twice.
And so you'd show up and you'd bring your film camera in tow. And
yeah, just like anything else. Everything was legal then. You could, there was no copyrighted infringement, none of that. So you were welcome to come in. It's just not that many people had them.
Do you remember the first show that you attempted to photograph?
That would have been The Who at the Shrine Auditorium in 67. So I can see for miles what's coming out about that time. I saw him twice that year. For me, The Who was the best. I could never see him enough.
I know you deceived me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have.
And so I want to talk about the stories behind some of these photographs. I mean, you really have just a who's who of some of the great performers of a generation, you know, from the members of the Beatles to Bob Dylan to Talking Heads and David Bowie and Jerry Garcia. The list just goes on and on and on. But one photo that I was struck by in the show was, it's a great photo of Joan Baez performing with a cap and a sort of penciled on beard, dressed up to look like Bob Dylan. It's a It's a strange, I didn't notice it at first and then had to sort of do a double take and it's like, huh, that's not Bob Dylan. What's the story with that photo?
It was at a Bread and Roses benefit at the Greek Theater on campus at UC Berkeley. And that day there, like most all festivals, there was always the word that Bob Dylan was going to be there. And it was like always low key. They didn't want to give him too much attention, but you really knew Bob Dylan was going to be there. And at the end of the day, 100% of the time, he was never there. But they sold a lot of tickets that way.
Uh-huh.
And at this particular one, everybody knew that Bob Dylan was going to be there. And Joan came out by herself to start singing Bob Dylan songs and doing a real good job. If you were anywhere past 40 feet from the stage, you'd have believed it was Bob Dylan.
It ain't no use to sit and wonder why. It don't matter anyhow.
She was remarkably made up during the period where he had a lot of makeup on, a lot of white face makeup and all that. She had all that on. She had a beard drawn on her face.
Uh-huh.
She had the clothes on. The only difference was that she had her guitar. And the people that were in the first 40 feet, they could see that, but it worked really well.
She walks out on stage and there's a roar of like, yeah. Oh, wow, Bob Dylan, he's actually here.
Oh, it was really good. It would be like as if Saturday Night Live got a hold of that performance back in the uh-huh. early 70s and go and run with it. It was very good and it worked well. But I met her later on at a presentation in Davis and gave her the photograph and she was thrilled.
That's great.
Say, try and make me change my mind and stay. We never did too much talk.
Another great photograph that I'd like to hear the story of is a photo of the Talking Heads performing, I think it's like in a coffee shop or something like that. Clearly a really small venue, probably before they were really who they became. But they have that sort of look about them. You can see David Byrne kind of commanding the stage in his way. Tell me a little bit about that show.
We had no idea what we were going to go see. It was a publicized show in a town called Davis, and it was small, 85-seater. The price was $1, actually 99 cents, and per show, and they were playing twice that night. And I had no idea what it was, but the sound and the music kept me jerking enough that I stayed for the second performance. It was really fun. I didn't know anything about them. I learned a little bit more after that. They were the beginnings of the punk phase of music going through America. And that was in 1977. They weren't hip then until publicity people told you how good they were.
Right. And when you're there, you know, in a small room with a band like the Talking Heads before they've really become this huge sensation, do you have that sense like, wow, these guys have something, they're really going?
Really
going somewhere?
You could talk to them when you're that close too, you know, and it wasn't so much. It was relaxed, you know, I really did have a feeling that this was going to go somewhere. And I think that was a change in music completely from what we were listening to that moment.
I hear music and it sounds like bells. I feel like my head is high.
Certain artists you've taken photos of multiple times over the course of their careers, like Eric Clapton, mm-hmm. for instance. You've got some photos of him from the early 70s, and then you've got some photos of him from like the 90s, I think. And what's it been like for you to sort of watch this generation of musicians get older and explore different parts of their catalog and their identities and different sort of musical trains of thought?
It was just progressively watching him learn to play better and be a little bit older. But in heart, there's no age limit if you enjoy rock and roll, I think. So it didn't bother me. I enjoy shooting young bands still to this day, though, more.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
For what reason?
I think that they want to show the world what they know, and they have a better time doing it. And I've always promoted that. When people ask me, what you should do in photography when you're starting out, should you worry about shooting big bands? And I tell them to shoot local bands, get a good approval rating with them, and find a magazine, and then start shooting bigger bands.
Right. Do you have a favorite photograph, an all-time favorite?
The one that I have of Led Zeppelin that's on display is a picture of Jimmy Page with Robert Plant and John Paul Jones in the background. It's in Kezar Stadium in June of 1973. And Page is playing a bow, as in a concert bow, maybe a cello bow, like that. And they're doing a song called Dazed and Confused.
Been dazed and confused for so long, it's not true.
He just released that photograph along with a bunch of other photographs on a reissue of the Houses of the Holy album. So that's pretty good.
Wow.
And I've had about 17 photo. I've had photographs on 17 different albums now.
Wow. And oftentimes these are photos that you've taken as a fan more so than as someone who's been commissioned to come and take photographs of a show, right?
Right.
Photography is now ubiquitous in a way that it was not when you first started taking photos back in the 60s. What advice would you have for the amateur photographer out there who's going to see their favorite band at a concert and maybe wants to try to snap a good photo from the crowd on their iPhone or something like that? Do you have any tips, any sort of pearls of wisdom that you can share?
I promote using phones myself. less is more.
Uh-huh.
And bringing in all that equipment and bumping into people. But for me, if you're enjoying what you're doing, that's the number one thing. Pursue what you're doing and have fun doing it. And photography, always keep a positive attitude about your negative image.
That's a good one.
They'll either get it or they won't get it.
Uh-huh. Well, Larry Hulst, congratulations on your show. It's a wonderful achievement, and thanks so much for taking the time to come in here.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Mommy, Daddy, come and look at me now. I'm a big man in a great big town.
That was photographer Larry Hulst speaking with Jake Brownell. Hulst's show, Front Row Center, will be on display at the Colorado Springs Fine Arts Center through May 21st. For more info, head to krcc.org. You're listening to Air Check from 91.5 KRCC. Stay with us.
From 91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is AirCheck, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Jake Brownell.
I'm Vicki Greger.
And I'm Jeff Beery. Vicki, for this next segment, you managed to get the Wild Reeds to swing by the 91.5 KRCC studios. It's the Rocky Mountain leg of their national tour. The band is from Los Angeles, and it's fronted by three talented women. What else do you know about this group?
Well, they're a harmony-rich, rocking group. They've done a few records, Blind and Brave in 2014, some EPs and singles, forthcoming, The World We Built. That'll be spring 2017. And a cool thing about them is they were one of the bands that were featured on NPR Music's Tiny Desk concert series in 2015.
Okay, well, here's Vicki's interview with the Wild Reeds, along with a couple of songs that they performed live here at the 91.5 KRCC studios.
We are the Wild Reeds, and this song is called Patience.
You attack me. Sleep again today. myself to blame. I said some things that I needed to say. Then I wiped my tears and started my day. I'm looking for a sign to tell me that I can forget, and I will learn something eventually. If I could just be
Reads. Thank you so much for being here today. 91.5 KRCC. Sharon Kinsey and McKinsey. Do I have
correct
that right? I'm struck so beautifully and with such emotion over the harmonies that you three hit. So I'm really curious, how did you meet, and then how did you know that your incredible individual singing voices were going to hit those kind of heights? How'd that all happen?
We didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'll answer the last part. We definitely did not know that it was going to work. Kinsey and I started singing together long before, and I'd never really sang harmony before. This is Sharon, by the way. I had to work like really hard at it for a few years, and then when Mackenzie joined, we did the same thing, and we still do it constantly. But it's really cool, because even if it isn't, you know, perfect, or we don't sound like the sister harmony, it still has something like very special and real about it that's kind of unveiled itself to us.
When you decide to do a song, is it a lot of thought about who's going to step up and take the lead with the other two coming behind it? Or do you just all kind of take the lead and see what fits the best?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's the person who's singing the song usually wrote the song because they're the most passionate about whatever situation they're in. So we just kind of fill in from there. And all of us sing every part. We can sing the soprano, we can sing the alto. So we all just kind of move to whoever sounds best on that song. Yeah.
You know, I wanted to ask you about the Tiny Desk, the NPR Music Tiny Desk concert, which is so beautiful. Will you fill in the blanks? I want to make sure I have this right. Were you part of the contest and then you got picked and that's how that all happened? What's the backstory to that?
No, actually we did partake in the first contest and we got placed on the blog, but we didn't win. But Bob came and saw us. He came and saw us at the Americana Music Festival, and we didn't even know he was going to be there, and he stayed through the whole thing, and then afterward invited us to come. And we had said, okay, we're going to be there in October, and we couldn't get a hold of him until the week of when we were going to be there, and a band just happened to pull out on Friday, the day that we were in town. And he's like, okay, I got 2 hours, let's do it. So, and we found that out the morning before we went. So it was like fate that it all kind of came together, which is
to
really
be fair,
beautiful.
The guy has like 7,000 unread emails.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and I don't attribute that to him being lazy at all.
Oh no,
no, he's got
it's
the best.
It's just intense. It's an intense job.
He's a great guy. He does a good job, truly. Yeah. I want to get back a little bit to songwriting. You mentioned songwriting and the people that take the lead on the songs. You know, when you did your first record, right? Blind and Brave. Is that writing, was that a very compartmentalized kind of writing compared to your forthcoming record that's coming out? How do you prepare your records?
I mean, they were very different processes. That Blind and Brave was years ago, and we had just become a band, a five-piece band with the members that we have now. So we really just came together with the songs we'd already written. I had just joined the band like 5 months prior, and we didn't really know how to make a record together yet or what it would be like. And I think after that experience, we had spent 3 years writing more songs separately, but also writing together a lot. You know, the guys, our rhythm section, Nick and Nick, were a lot more involved in that process. And because we weren't just meeting and just becoming a band, or me and the guys weren't just becoming part of the band, we had a lot of years to like get into each other's musical style, and we still have very different writing styles, but you can hear on this record that we're a bit more of a unit, and we have like sort of grown into our own sound in that process, which has been really cool. So yeah, they were definitely very different processes.
Well, Wild Reeds, I so appreciate you being here and playing such beautiful music, and certainly keep the records coming our way.
We will.
Love
thank
playing
you.
Them. And thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you.
All right, let's take it out with one more song.
We're the Wild Reeds, and this song is called The World We Built.
No one knows just what we've got. We build open, you don't find some.
That was the Wild Reeds performing live at 91.5 KRCC. You're listening to Air Check.
Over the last few months, Colorado Springs has seen several popular DIY music and art spaces shuttered. For local bands and concertgoers, these places were important outlets for music that didn't necessarily have a home at some of the larger, more established venues in town. Chief among these DIY spaces was the Flux Capacitor, a warehouse venue that hosted hundreds of shows over the last 2 years. The Flux Capacitor was shut down over fire code violations in the wake of the tragic Ghost Ship fire in Oakland last December. Flux co-founder Brian Ostro joined me in the studio to talk about the importance of the DIY scene and what's next for the Flux Capacitor. First of all, for folks who aren't familiar with the Flux, briefly, what is the Flux Capacitor?
It was a all-ages DIY venue, art space community venue. We had shows from everything from punk to metal to hip-hop, folk. We had everything. And then we also had art shows. We had benefit shows. We had activism. You know, people could come and have meetings and stuff. And that's what it was. We were going from December 2014 to December 2016 for 2 full years. We, unfortunately, were just shut down in the wake of the tragedy in Oakland that happened, which, you know, mm-hmm. we are very sad about. In the wake of that, a lot of DIY venues have been shut down, and ours was one of them because of fire issues. But we're not going to let that stop us. We're just going to come back better and bigger than ever, and no one will be able to stop us. So,
what is DIY for someone who has heard that phrase, you know, DIY, do it yourself, in reference to the music scene? What does that mean to you?
So everybody growing up in the scene, in the music scene, the way that you're kind of taught is you think, okay, you got to get this big record deal. You got to have the record label do this for you. You have to have a manager to do this. And that's not the case. You can do it all yourself, you know, record yourself, put out your own record, put out your own record label, you know, do all of this stuff, book your own shows. And it's important. And what we've been saying lately too, when I was in Germany, when I was in Europe on tour with one of my bands, this guy actually was awesome. He said, you know, DIY is great, but DIT is better. Do it together. So we're more on like a do it together thing, you know. It's not about the profit or the fame or the, you know, aspects of that. It's about the community, and it's about doing something important and doing it for the sheer love of it. And that's what DIY is.
So what's the importance of a space like the Flux, a DIY music and event space, to a place like Colorado Springs?
You know, I think it's extremely important to a place like Colorado Springs. Colorado Springs is, you know, as most people know, you know, this, you know, center of evangelical Christians, military, you know, all of this. And there's just so much more to it. There's some of the most incredible bands I've ever heard are in this town, and artists are just like incredible. So there's something really important and special in a town like this. And I think it needs to be showcased more. I mean, there's certain like noise artists and certain art shows and certain things don't really work well at a bar or a big venue. It works in a small, intimate setting. And that's what I think is really important about a place like Flux, and about not even just us, just a DIY scene in general. And for all ages places, I mean, a lot of kids are, you know, down on their luck, not fitting in school or at their work or with their family or anything. And, you know, they don't really have a place to fit in, but they'll go to a place with some music, with some like-minded people, and they finally have a place to fit in, you know, for once. And I think it's really important, and it's a really positive thing.
And so do you guys have anything on the horizon as far as potentially a new space for the Flux?
Yeah, we've been looking at a bunch of places. A lot of them have their own little things where, you know, we walk in and it's like, oh, well, this could be cool, but this wouldn't work or this wouldn't work. We went to one place and it's just amazing. I fell in love with it. I was freaking out about it. It's a little more than we were kind of wanting to spend, but it's just so perfect, and it just screams Flux to me. And we've just been really working hard trying to get that. So we're trying to work out details with that and see what we can do to get it, but nothing's really set in stone right now. So I don't really want to get anybody's hopes up yet, but it's definitely in the works. So
what's sort of your grand dream? Like, what would you love for the Flux to be in the future?
You know, I would love for it to just be like a huge artist collective. Have everything from, you know, art, records, books, a meeting place, shows, positivity. Like, that's what I want it to be. I want it to be what we had, but even bigger. And if somebody comes and checks it, you know, it is fine and we can't get shut down and it is safe for everybody. And yeah, that's pretty much all I want. I want it to be kind of what it was, but, you know, even on a larger scale. And I think we got the abilities to do that.
Brian Ostro, thanks so much for coming into the studio.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That was Jake Brownell speaking with Brian Ostro, co-founder of the Flux Capacitor in Colorado Springs. As organizers of the Flux search for a new space to call home, others in town are working to put together DIY arts and music events wherever they can. Mitchell McCura and Han Sales used to work at Mountain Fold Books, which was a popular downtown bookstore and event space that closed in November. Together with a group of other artists and musicians, Sales and McCura have created Cloud Factory. It's a new collective aiming to keep the DIY spirit alive in Colorado Springs. Han Sales, Mitch McCura, thanks for coming in. Appreciate you guys taking time out of your bohemian schedules.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're stoked to be here.
You guys were both very, very much involved with the Mountain Folds project, and you are now, you've got a new project underway. It's called the Cloud Factory, or is it just Cloud Factory?
Yeah, Cloud Factory.
Cloud Factory. Tell me, what is Cloud Factory?
Cloud Factory, we are considering a loosely affiliated collective of artists, et cetera, makers, creators, based in Colorado Springs, and we're trying to facilitate arts-related events. So that's from music to poetry to gallery shows to meals together in pop-up venues throughout the city to engage people and also to support emerging and marginalized artists.
You don't have a physical space to call home?
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no. Not currently. Not probably not.
What's that
very
about?
Near future.
It's about flexibility. And I think it's really important in this time. We've had a lot of spaces shut down, a lot of venues shut down in a short amount of time. You know, Mountain Fold and Rooted Studio and The Flux shutting down all within a span of 3 months of each other. And those were DIY venue meccas. And so to me, the project is about keeping energy alive and letting folks know that we can create and do the kinds of events anywhere. The box, the room that we do it in, isn't what's important.
You've had a couple of Cloud Factory events so far. What's on the horizon?
I can mostly only speak to the music side. We've got a house show coming up at the Mesa House. And that's been kind of a house show venue on the radar for probably over 10 years in Colorado Springs. And a lot of creators have actually lived there. We're also taking care of like half of the promotion of Joseph Lamar's album release show at the Zodiac. So we are collaborating as well with like venues that are already established and have communities behind them and like trying to bring some connectivity to those things. I'm kind of in the works of potentially doing an outdoor small music festival that we haven't totally solidified all of the details to, but we're hoping we can do it on top of a parking garage because that sounds so so romantic.
Right.
For non-music related events, we're going to start a series called Bread, which is a series that actually happens in Kansas City, and the idea is it's meal and micro grant. So you have a bunch of people buy into a meal for $10, and then you have a bunch of creators or makers or people in the city pitch ideas that they think are interesting. And everyone who's at the meal votes on a person, and all of the entry money goes to that person. So they get a micro grant, you know, and nice. You don't need anyone. You just need a bunch of people to come together and have a meal together. And that's one of the things that we're going to start by doing. That Switchback, they have donated the space to us for do it in the evening. And then in the summer, we can do it in parks that are underused. We can move that anywhere.
Sounds like a great idea.
Thanks. So
communal,
the first, yeah,
breaking bread.
The first one on that for that series is March 24th at 7 p.m. at Switchback. One of the most important projects to me is mining and curating art and events from people that are rooted in Colorado Springs. And it's important to me that arts is not synonymous with gentrification. And I think that the only way you can do that is if you're really intentional about who you're inviting and who you're giving a stage to. And I think that means looking for people who are really, really good at what they do and haven't been given a platform, and reaching out and connecting those things. So that is in our starting mission, is to combine those things. And the way that Mitchell curates shows and the way that I'm planning on doing events is really by having other people come to me with event ideas and facilitating them.
That was Han Sales and Mitchell McCura of Cloud Factory, a new arts and music collective here in Colorado Springs. For more information, head to krcc.org. You're listening to AirCheck. Stay with us.
From 91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is AirCheck, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Vicki Greger.
I'm Jake Brownell.
I'm Jeff Beery. For the last segment, we've got a profile of a musician that recently paid a visit to Colorado Springs from the distant, snowy land of Finland.
That's right. Finnish musician Lau Nau spent a weekend in Colorado Springs last month to lead a workshop on film scoring at Colorado College. AirCheck's Hannah Fleming recorded that workshop and spoke with Lau Nau about scoring the 1920s-era Swedish horror film Haxen, as well as the art of improvisation and Lau Nau's career as an experimental folk artist.
I quite often like start with some kind of a bass line, like this.
I met Finnish composer and producer Lara Naukarinen, also known as Lau Nau, at a film scoring workshop at Colorado College. She was working with students on the 1922 Swedish horror documentary Haxen, which she scored for a DVD reissue in 2015. The improvisational, multi-instrumental nature of the music begs the question, how might a narrative of demonology and witchcraft resonate today? As Lau Nau led the students in and out of scenes, encouraging them to improvise with different instruments, I noticed how the music told a story of its own.
And I was thinking that we could start like with small sounds, like miniature sounds, because there is no drama here yet. It's more like a lecture. So we could like do small stuff. And then towards the end of this scene, he's talking about how the hell was believed to be. So then we could like dive into this darker thing, maybe drones and something dark. And he shows pretty nice pictures of hell, and you will notice when the hell parts come. And then there's also
the... Haxen has personal significance for Lau Nau because it kicked off her film scoring career, which includes a 2015 Cannes official selection entitled Panama, among other titles. Since that time, she's been performing Haxan live with the Swedish Montivier Ensemble in the La Plante, Finland, and in San Francisco. The film explores themes of mental illness, misogyny, and hysteria, themes that Launau says are just as relevant today as they were in 1922.
When the film was made,
what?
And it kind of draws like allegory from the Middle Age to modern times. And it kind of reflects who are the witches of the modern time.
In addition to film scores, Launau's recorded music blends improv and folk structures to create emotional impressions of melancholia and of isolation. And yet, her albums offer an alternative, an escape to another world. The sounds are familiar, but include complex elements and quirky instruments that force the listener into a realm of free association.
What is that called that's to the right of the xylophone?
This mouth harmonica? Yeah,
yes.
So it's an old, like, quite a kind of big mouth harmonica that has lost its shells. So it looks quite rough, but it has great sounds. Perfect for creepy music.
Did you find that? Was it?
Yeah, it's a gift from a friend. Yeah, like quite many of these instruments. This is also a gift from a friend. People know that I like to collect sounds. This my friend sent from Chicago. It's like a vintage bird call instrument that imitates birds.
If you had to go to a deserted island with only one instrument, which one would you take?
I would take my singing voice because it's the most natural instrument for me and easy. Yeah. So one of my inspirations has been Eliane Radig. And Eliane Radig, she's interested in the way that harmonics interact with each other. So she says, only very good musicians can do it. It's easy to make a C or an F, but my material needs to sound immaterial. The little beats that become pulsations and have a character of immateriality. The sound becomes like a rainbow. It's not possible to catch a rainbow, it's not possible to catch the aurora, but they are there. The difference between a great performer and a kid is that a great performer knows how to find richness in a sound.
How did it feel to start just playing, like, randomly? Good, yeah. And just, I want to say that just, like, relax, like, we are just doing this for ourselves now, so we can go as crazy as we want or do as little as we want, so whatever feels good for you.
Could you tell me about the story behind one of your songs?
All the songs have a meaning for me, and different ones, of course. Sometimes the song can be a message for another person, or then it can be a reflection of myself or some even political opinions. And yeah, I can tell about one song for my new album. So for example, a song called Elena. It's like a letter that I wrote to myself like 10 years after what I would say to myself when I was in a hard situation, like how I would help my 10-year-old younger self in this moment. So that has a really like personal meaning for me, but of course listeners don't need to know that. They can just listen.
Yes, voices.
Launau's performance that Saturday included overhead projections from silent films she'd worked on. They created a sensual storytelling experience, painted a vivid picture of a Finnish dreamscape. Coupled with the music, the piece's common thread was nostalgia. As Launau builds each layer of a song, she tweaks it live so that it's different every time. Even if I saw Launau perform again, I know I would never hear the story told with the same characters, the same twists and turns, or the same ending.
My preferred setting is something that I haven't tried before. It's like an adventure that never stops.
Launau is currently working on a new album to be released in September. For 91.5 KRCC, I'm Hannah Fleming.
This edition of AirCheck on 91.5 KRCC. You can stream this episode of AirCheck, in fact, any episode of AirCheck, at our website, krcc.org. And I highly encourage you to get the 91.5 KRCC mobile app for your iPhone and Android devices at iTunes App Store or at Google Play.
For 91.5 KRCC and AirCheck, I'm Jake Brownell.
I'm Jeff Beery.
And I'm Vicki Greger.